Welcome to Funny, They Don't Look Jewish, where Judaism appears in the panels. Our purpose is to find characters, stories, and issues of comics that explore explicitly Jewish content. I'm Henry Bernstein.
I'm Brandon Bernstein.
No relation. So, Brandon, we're here in a virtual space. I'm coming to you from hyperspace, and you're in a comic book library somewhere.
I'm in the library of Dream of the Endless, yeah. What makes this podcast different from all other podcasts that we've done? The fact that it's the first one we've recorded not in the same physical space, which feels a little weird, Henry. Like, I'm very much used to coming to your house and seeing the equipment laid out on the table, and now I'm alone in my bedroom, alone in my apartment, where I'm spending most of the time for the past month plus, because you guessed it, listeners, we're in the middle of this corona craziness.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, and of course, you know, we hope everyone's staying safe and staying inside, and so we can kick this thing. And, you know, thank you to all the essential people out there. And, you know, we hope listening to podcasts is something you'll continue to enjoy. And, you know, we're here for you.
For those of you looking to fill your time, we hope that listening to podcasts is a good way to spend it.
Yeah, but here we're looking at some old stuff, which is really fun. Who is that old character we're looking at today?
So this week, for the first time, we're going from Marvel to Marvel. We usually jump back and forth from Marvel to DC. We're sticking in Marvel, and we're actually looking for the first time, not just at a Jewish superhero, but at an Israeli superhero. This week, we are exploring the adventures of Sabra. I first discovered her when I was reading X-Men comics growing up in the 90s. She appeared in this storyline called Operation Zero Tolerance. And I remember as a young kid just being like, whoa, who's this cool superhero that wears, you know, these Jewish colors of blue and white, and, you know, clearly has a Star of David on her costume. What is going on? And I was fascinated by her. But there wasn't really much in terms of Jewish content in those X-Men issues. So the question you're really asking, who is Sabra? Sabra is a character originally created by Bill Mantlow and Sal Buscema. Her first appearance was in February 1981 in Incredible Hulk number 256. And guess what? We'll be covering that very issue in just a little bit. But who is she in the pages? Her name is Ruth Bat-Seraph, a pretty interesting name. Ruth, the daughter of a type of fiery angel, I suppose. Although, fun fact, as we'll see in this issue, she was originally published as Ruth Ben-Seraph, which clearly were these, you know, Bill Mantlow and Sal Buscema are these, like, as far as I know, Italian guys. They are not Jewish creators, creating this Israeli Jewish superheroine. And they clearly did not understand the gendered aspects of Hebrew grammar. So they originally called her Ruth Ben-Seraph, which would mean son of Sarah. And so in later appearances, her name was adjusted and changed to Bat-Seraph, or daughter of Seraph. So she has this little retcon immediately in her history.
That's really funny.
Yes. Now, before she appears in 256, she has the briefest, like, one panel appearance in Incredible Hulk number 250, which was actually an issue showing us a page of many, many different international superheroes, such as the Collective Man, unfortunately, from China. A lot of these international superheroes kind of were just playing with some fairly stereotypical tropes that are a little uncomfortable these days, but there was the Collective Man from China, the Soviet superheroes, Captain Britain, and the Arabian Knight, who I believe came from Saudi Arabia. So Sabra was one of these new international heroes who appeared, and the point of this is it was all building to a comic book known as the Marvel Superhero Contest of Champions. Now, we're probably going to tackle this series a little bit in part two of Sabra. We're not going to dive into it yet, but just know that there were all these international heroes that were created purposely for a storyline where they were going to bring heroes from all different countries together to engage in some sort of worldwide contest. And the last thing I just want to say about Sabra is her superpowers, which are she has super strength, she can fly, and she has this really cool cape that looks sort of like a peacock feathers almost.
Yeah.
And she like shoots energy quills and paralyzing quill darts out of her cape.
Yeah. I didn't understand if the cape was part of her superpowers or like part of her arsenal, like, you know, Batman's utility belt.
I think the cape is part of the arsenal. The strength and flight are part of her natural mutant powers. She is later discovered to be a mutant and appears in a lot of mutant related storylines.
So as you said, she was created by Bill Mantlow and Sal Buscema, right?
Yes.
So the first appearance that we're going to cover of her is from The Incredible Hulk, number 256, published in 1981. Cover artist was a young John Romita Jr. And the writers were Bill Mantlo, Sal Buscema, colorist Bob Sharon, letterer Jim Novak, and editor Al Milgram.
Page one of the story, we're not going to spend too much time on it, other than to say in the top right, you may notice, for those of you who are looking along at some of the images we're going to post later, it says special thanks to Belinda Glass for the name and concept of Sabra, which raises this great question, Henry.
Who's Belinda Glass?
Yes, exactly. That is the question on everyone's tongue. And I did some research, as I always do, and there's not too much other than Belinda Glass, A, is apparently a singer. That's her independent career. She was a singer. And she was Mark Gruenwald's first wife. So Mark Gruenwald may be a name familiar to you, as he's a famous comic writer from the 80s, for Marvel Comics especially. But one of the things Mark Gruenwald was best known for is A, he was one of three co-writers for the aforementioned Contest of Champions, in which Sabra played a role, and B, at the back of every issue of Contest of Champions, there were these little bios of all the characters involved, and this ended up evolving into what Mark Gruenwald is best known for, that being the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, of which there wound up being many, many volumes, letting you know who all the characters were. It was sort of the like early Bible in the days before the internet and Marvel Wikia and that sort of thing. So Gruenwald was the guy who created this handbook, and his first wife apparently came up with the character of Sabra. And just based on the fact that her name's Belinda Glass, and I can't really find too much else, I have to assume that she's probably Jewish, and therefore made the suggestion at some point of like, hey, why not there be a Jewish Israeli superhero? Oh, I know, we could name her Sabra. Like, it's just cool that it that they're giving credit to who came up with it.
That's great. That's great. Which you don't see a lot in, this era in comics. Marvel was better than DC in the earlier days of telling you who everyone was, but you know, for years, DC Comics, if you didn't know, if you didn't recognize the art or the writer, didn't say it, you know.
Right. So, yeah.
And that's just the main credits. Forget, you know, who came up with something.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And I think like to sort of give credit to someone who's not even a full-time comic book creator is just sort of like a really cool thing to see. All right, let's dive into our issue. So by page six, we find a boat that is docking in Tel Aviv. In fact, not just any boat, but the freighter ship, the Star of David, which I found like a little on the nose.
Very original.
Very original. In fact, I wanted us to have a running gag, but I don't think it appears quite enough to really be worth it. But let's do it anyway. Let's count the number of times that Star of David pops up in our Sabra issues, both this episode and next. So we have the freighter Star of David, and there's a narration caption that lets us know that Israelis don't believe the Hulk actually exists, which I just like. That tickled me so much, Henry, the idea that Israelis would just be like, Maze ha-Hulk haze, ze shtuyot, it's silliness, there's no such thing. You can't tell me you actually believe in the Hulk. Like, I could easily see Israelis being like, that's a bunch of narishkeit, of course not.
And like, why not? Why don't, like, who else do they not believe in, you know?
Right, yeah, it's such an interesting question. Like, all the superheroes, I think the point is that most superheroes up to this point have been in the United States, so it's funny thinking the rest of the world being like, that's a bunch of Hollywood special effects, they're not real.
Right.
So great. So Bruce is stowed away on this boat, the Star of David, and the crew is raising up the cargo while Bruce is asleep. And Bruce wakes up sort of jolted from the shaking, thinks that he's being captured, even though they have no idea he's there, and panics and turns into the Hulk. The people around him are freaking out, and it's cool. We actually have translations from both the Hebrew and the Arabic. You get to see, because they're in Tel Aviv, that there's a mixture of Israelis and I don't know if they're Arab Israelis or Palestinians or, you know, just Arab workers on the docks. By page nine, we get an introduction to the policewoman Ruth Ben-Sera, who calls in the fact that there's been a Hulk sighting and gets confirmation that the military will be responding. And then on page 11, we have Hulk confronting the Israeli military, and an Israeli commander can't understand a word that Hulk is saying because the Hulk is speaking English. I don't know about you, Henry, but at first I was a little surprised by this, because in my head I was like, every time I've gone to Israel, English is quite commonly spoken.
Yeah, that's actually not what I thought you were going to say.
Oh, what did you think?
I thought you were going to say it was my understanding that Hulk only knew two words, Hulk smash.
It would have been a really good joke. I'm really glad that you made it.
He's quite articulate in this era of Hulk. I didn't realize that he was, you know,
he like
I
he has
thought
a
back then he still was, you know, Hulk smash.
right. It's like it's a pretty simple vocabulary, but he's able to speak and articulate and say many things, right? It's like really kind of surprising how intelligent he comes across. I just wanted to share that in 1948, there was a law and administration ordinance of the Israeli government that removed English as an official language of the country. But according to Wikipedia, ever since the early 1990s, increased exposure to American culture, especially through television and other media, was massive in English, or it was massive in Israel, and therefore increased the number of English speakers in the country. So I actually think it's not surprising in the early 1980s that there would be so many Israeli workers who didn't speak English at all. The Israel that you and I may know, in which it seems like so many people speak English, is very much a product of its time. So indeed, they don't know English. On page 12, we have the real focus of our issue. We have our policewoman, Ruth, and she transforms into Israeli superheroine Sabra. Once again, that stunning, clear white pick white costume. I always wonder, like, it looks so cool on the page, but what a terrible idea to wear a white costume, right? Like, it would get dirty all the time.
Says the biggest fan of Moon Knight ever.
Right, well, fair enough, fair enough. But like with both of them, it's very silly, and I love it. I want to talk about three other things that caught my interest on this page, Henry. Number one, the way she introduces herself, which is Sabra, superheroine of the State of Israel. As I mentioned, not only is she an international character, but Sabra is very much like the hero of the State of Israel. In the
She's their
same way,
Captain America.
she's the Captain America, but she's like Captain America, and partly it's because of the way United States tends to, you know, look at itself as being a country of the free. Captain America often is written as like disagreeing with the American government and going against it and standing for American values over the state. We'll see Sabra sort of step up against that a little bit, but for the most part, she's very much identified as like not just the hero of Israel, the culture, but like literally the hero of the state of Israel, right? She is like a government sanctioned superhero. And we'll find out later a bit of a secret, right? Like most people don't yet know that Israel has its own superhero, which maybe
Right.
coincides with the fact that most Israelis don't believe in them. The other thing is we get this really cool editor's note explaining her code name. Henry, would you read our editor's note for us?
Editor's note. The word Sabra denotes a native-born Israeli, the name derived from an indigenous form of fruit, a prickly pear possessed of a sweet interior and a spiny outer surface to protect it from its enemies.
Right. So, like, on the one hand, let's acknowledge Sabra's nickname is sort of, I mean, her superhero name is sort of eye rolling, right? Like, really? You made an Israeli superheroine and called Sabra? But also, it's just so cool that they explain that and they went into the idea that it's the name of this fruit and that Israelis tend to describe themselves in this way as having this prickly exterior, but then a really soft and sweet inside. It's just neat to see. But then my favorite part, Henry, is on the next panel, we see Sabra flying away from a building and there's a sign behind Sabra. And on the sign, there's a bunch of Hebrew letters. And looking at it, the top word, it just seems like gobbledygook to me. I don't think it's actually a Hebrew word at all. It looks like it's maybe like Dalid, Samech, Kuf, Dalid, Daskad, Daskad. I don't really know what that might be.
Yeah, this word might be Yisrael, the first part of
Right, so the
Yisrael.
bottom word is definitely Israel. And the word in the middle, at first I thought it was nonsense, but then I sent it to my coworker, Reut, who's Israeli, and she pointed out the greatest thing, Henry. That word in the middle is Kaf Lamed Lamed Yud Dalid, Klalid. And what does Klalid mean? It means quilled, like her cape. Literally, the sign says quilled Israel, or perhaps quilled Israeli. Like, how cool is that? Which, given that they have the word quilled in Hebrew, it seems foolish to me. Like, I don't see how that top word could be nonsense, but I cannot for the life of me figure out what it is. So, listeners, if you look at this picture and you're able to tell us what you think that word is, please let us know. We would love the advice. Jumping ahead to page 14, the Hulk is transformed back into Bruce Banner and is sharing some delicious watermelon. in a summer day with a young boy named Sahad. And Sahad is a young Arab pickpocket who stole the watermelon and is now sharing it with Bruce, who helped him out. In the distance behind them, they're sitting at this water fountain. And behind them, you can see these buildings with large signs above them. Once again, looking at the signs in Hebrew, I thought they must be saying something. I couldn't quite figure it out. But if you look at the bottom one, it's a bit of a stretch, but I'm actually wondering, Henry, if the bottom one is Sin Tet Resh Kuf, in which case, is it saying Stark, as in Stark Enterprises, as in Iron Man?
That would be awesome.
It would be awesome if it was. You have to do a bit of a stretch because it looks more like a Zion than a Raish, but I think it might be a fancy way of saying Stark, and nothing else quite made sense to me.
Let's go with it then.
Great. So Stark Enterprises has a building in Israel, in Tel Aviv. I love that idea. So as Bruce and Sahad bond, Sahad explains, "It is very hard to be an Arab in Israel. Both my people and the Israelis say that this land is theirs. They could share it, but two very old books tell them they must kill each other over it. Me, I don't read books." It's like both an oversimplified description of the conflict and also like, yeah, that's it in a nutshell. Clearly the point of the authors is they're trying to sort of make an overall statement about the pointlessness of this violence and the fact that like there are people, you know, what this book does capture very beautifully, I think, is the fact that like, on all sides, on the Israeli side, on the Arab side, on the Palestinian side, there are many, many people who all they really want to do is be able to live their life and be able to like eat securely and live safely. And unfortunately, little hospitable Sahad, who loves connecting with Bruce Banner, gets some extra money, goes off to buy them some more food, a little treat. Bruce is contemplating what they do and don't have in common. And all of a sudden, the cafe that Sahad goes into blows up. It's devastating. Sahad is shown clearly dead. Bruce is freaking out about it. And we see a group of terrorists who were responsible for it. It's a group of Arab fighters who Bruce calls terrorists, right? Like I'm using the language of the comic book. "In the name of Arab sovereignty over these lands, we deal retribution to those who would steal from us." I think the point of our author is trying to show that there are people on both sides who are fighting and attacking over the land. And so the terrorists are trying to make sure that nobody survived the explosion and trying to get out before Israeli military arrives. On page 16, Sabra sees the Hulk from afar fighting them, but for some reason she makes the mistake of thinking that Hulk is actually the one responsible for blowing up the cafe.
This is such a classic hero meets Hulk moment. Like, how many times does this happen where the Marvel hero thinks Hulk's a bad guy? Like, don't they know by now? It's 1981. Yeah.
Well, and I think like the worst part of it is that she comes in literally as he's punching them. Like he's literally like out of these guys. So the fact that she comes by and has the thought balloon, "He is in league with the butchers." Like it doesn't make any sense. It's very strange.
She's kind of a hothead.
She's quite the hothead. She launches her energy quills at the Hulk. The Hulk seems unaffected by it. And on page 17, Sabra thinks to herself,
"I was sworn to keep the program and my super identity a secret so as not to forewarn our enemies. But I am sure that my superiors will forgive me for breaking my oath to deal with this emergency."
So I just found that interesting, this idea that Sabra is such a secret that nobody knows she exists yet, right? This idea that like she's supposed to keep secret the fact that an Israeli superhero even exists so that they can use it at like just the right time, which feels to me like such a like Israeli plan that would exist, right? Thinking of like Mossad and sort of secret intelligence, the idea that Israel would be like, of course we have a superhero weapon, but like we're not going to tell you about it and reveal it until like the perfect time. And then what do you know? You can plan all you want, but the Hulk cares not for your perfect time. So Sabra and Hulk fight back and forth. On page 19, Hulk is back up to his feet, shocking Sabra over the fact that he's sort of recovered from their fight. And she thinks to herself, Star of David, I thought he was finished. That's number two. And also, I've never seen any Jew or Israeli use Star of David. Like, I'm used to like the Beast being like, oh, my stars and garters, right? Or like so many comic book characters having a catchphrase. The idea that her catchphrase of surprise would be Star of David, they can't be like Oh,
yeah. Most Jews that I know, when they're exclaiming like that, use the name of a Jew, another famous Jew, when they're, you know, feeling like that.
Do you mean a Jew from like maybe 2,000 years ago or
something
so?
Like who, that.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
At least in my house. I'm going to start saying Star of David like that, though. I stub my toe. Star of David.
Star of David.
Actually roll off the tongue. There were Jews working at Marvel that could have helped them with that one.
Or maybe she was just desperately thinking of the freighter from earlier, and she was just like, oh no, just like on the Star of David.
My favorite ship.
The best freighter in all the land.
Yeah.
So Hulk runs away from the fight. On page 20, Sabra follows the Hulk out to a desert in Jordan, still thinking that he's in league with terrorists for some reason. And then on page 22, we get the ever-articulate Hulk, as you mentioned earlier, making a really powerful statement to Sabra as he says, "Boy died because Boy's people and yours both want to own land. Boy died because you wouldn't share. Boy died because of two old books that say his people and yours must fight and kill for land. Now Boy is dead, but Boy didn't even read books. Hulk came looking for peace, but there is no peace here." And he bounds away and like, whew, this was a harsh description of the Israeli-Arab conflict circa 1981.
That was a really good Hulk speech.
Yeah, right?
You know, like in his like simplified, you know, kind of way of talking, he's, you know, that was great.
He kind of cut to the core of it, right? Like earlier we were talking about it being like maybe a little too simplified, but the simplicity of it actually helped it to just cut through. There was no rationalizing things. It was just, right, like, there are innocent bystanders who didn't even care about things that were just living their life.
Yeah, and that's also one of the great things about Hulk is when he is sort of like his childlike mentality sometimes. They don't always do that, but like, you know, like he befriends this little boy as Bruce Banner, but like that carries over into his Hulk personality. And he's upset that this boy died and he's repeating back what the boy told him. And it makes sense to him. That oversimplification makes sense to him because Hulk inherently, he's sort of like
a child,
you know, he's a child and his right and wrong is very black and white.
Right. You hurt me. Yeah. You angered me. You are wrong.
Yeah, and so I will smash you,
right?
You know, and that's why he gets into trouble a lot, you know, because and he's misunderstood.
And ironically, it might be a little bit of the Arab-Israeli conflict with each side sort of being like, "You did this to me, and now I'm going to fight you," right? So there's sort of an irony in the fact that Hulk is both criticizing it and yet probably behaves pretty similar in some ways. Henry, would you do me a favor and just read for us at the end there the bottom three rows of the last page and just get us that narration captions? The end of the issue there.
"For an instant, Sabra prepares to give chase. She is, after all, an Israeli super agent, a soldier, a weapon of war. But she is also a woman capable of feeling, capable of caring. It has taken the Hulk to make her see this dead Arab boy as a human being. It has taken a monster to awaken her own sense of humanity."
And we just see in the panels that Sabra falls to her knees, essentially weeping over the life of this boy. I think what I love about this narration is that it helps Sabra live up to her name. She is incredibly prickly on the outside, incredibly hot-headed, ready to fight at everything. And yet inside, she is sweet and empathetic and deeply caring and feeling with a great sense of sensitivity, such that Hulk actually got through to her, right? She's not so hot-headed as to not acknowledge what Hulk has said. I just love, I mean, I didn't even really think of it until we were talking, that like she is a Sabra in this case. We've seen the soft barrier by the end of the issue.
She's not a perfect altruistic hero. We don't know much about her because we only met her once. And you get that like she too, like many people, saw one side of the issue and that was it. And it was and then now she sees, oh, there's humanity, there are people there.
We're in 1991 and we're still sticking with the Incredible Hulk. Incredible Hulk number 386. So Henry, why don't you tell us about the creative team and sure. then we'll take us through.
So this is published October 1991. Cover artist, Dale Keown. Writer, Peter David. Penciler, Dale Keown. Inker, Mark Farmer. Colorist, Glynis Oliver. Letterer, Joe Rosen. Editor, Bobby Chase. Peter David and Dale Keown. That's how I think of the Hulk. They're, you know, the 90s. That this was like, any. I didn't buy the Hulk that often, but that's the team that I, when I close my eyes and think of the Hulk, it's the you know, the way they're presented here.
Right. And I mean, part of that is the fact that, right, like Peter David had a 12-year long run on The Incredible Hulk, which is like, in terms of classic Marvel runs, I feel like that's second only to Chris Claremont's 17 right. years on the X-Men, right? Like, I don't know right. of many writers who stick to a book quite that long. So yeah, Peter David was synonymous with the Hulk for a very long time, especially in the early 90s. Let's talk a tiny bit about Peter David. Peter David is the son of Gunter and Dahlia David. Dahlia is Israeli born, so he is, you know, Israeli descended. And we know that not only does he go to synagogue, but in fact, he goes to a Reform synagogue. And the reason we know that is he has a blog post in 2017 about a Comic-Con he was invited to go to that happened to fall over Yom Kippur. And he basically told the Comic-Con, "I'll only go if you can connect me to a Reform synagogue to go to on Yom Kippur, so I can go the days around it to the con." So cool to see that. And we actually even know, his Wikipedia page let us know, based on a blog, unfortunately from a time when he was sick and his wife was sharing his Hebrew name for the sake of healing. We know his Hebrew name, and he's got a pretty badass Hebrew name. He is Jacob ben Joachim, or Yaakov ben Joachim, which, like,
that's awesome name.
Great sounding name. Yeah.
And I like that the Wikipedia entry where it mentions that, it says, "David has been a conservative Jew, but as of October 2003, attends a Reform synagogue. His Hebrew name is patronymic form, Jacob ben Joachim. He has, however, expressed reservations about organized religion." I just think that's funny. Like, okay, thanks.
It's just, we've collected all the information we can. People want us yeah. to know. I'm sure that the only, like, obviously it was another Jew who wrote that, right? Like, somebody who's, like, proud of the fact that there's this Jewish comic book writer. And is like, "We know this about him. We need it to be on the page. It's noteworthy." So look, Henry, I mean, we kind of passed over it, but we have to acknowledge the name of the story is Little Hitler. So, you know, when you hear that title, your mind kind of races, like, what is possibly going on? What is happening? So let's just give that part away before we dive into the actual Jewish content. Basically, there's a prophetess named Delphi, named after the oracle at Delphi from Greek mythology, who has a vision of the future and sees a young boy who basically will grow up to be the next Hitler, who will conquer countries and lead to massive genocide. So we have this really difficult situation and this knowledge that this guy is going to become the next Hitler. And this organization that she is prophetic for hears that information. And basically there's a guy named Achilles who is heading off to kill the next Hitler. So the hypothetical question, if you could travel back in time and kill Hitler as a baby before anything happened, would you? That's what this comic's going to explore.
Yeah, they're doing it.
They're doing it in comic book fashion, which is really fascinating.
I love that.
So we're going to jump ahead to page 9. We are in, where else? Jerusalem, where a Mr. Rabin, on behalf of the Israeli government, welcomes a couple of an ambassador and his wife to Jerusalem. Now, this couple is from a fictional country. I love the Marvel fictional countries. This one is Draburg or Drayburg. And they refer to something that happened in Tel Aviv, but we don't know what just yet. And there's mention of the fact that Sabra is on the case. So at this point, Sabra is a known commodity, and she's sort of the Israeli super agent / secret service / right, like when something troublesome happens, Sabra's on the case. The big question I had reading this, Henry, when you read, excuse me, that there's a man from the Israeli government whose last name was Rabin, did you find yourself asking, is this supposed to be Yitzhak Rabin?
Of course. Yeah.
It's assumed that it's got to be Yitzhak Rabin. And of course, this comic, as we said, came out in 1991, during which time Yitzhak Rabin was in the government, but was not prime minister. He'd been prime minister, right, I think, sometime in the 70s, and he had his second time as prime minister. He wasn't elected again until 1992. So it is very possible that this is indeed Yitzhak Rabin. just at a time when he's not yet prime minister again. All right, on page 11, the Hulk is talking with this organization I mentioned earlier, which I didn't say the name, but it's called the Pantheon. The Pantheon, which when you hear Pantheon, you think, oh, like a pantheon of various gods and deities. And indeed, all the various figures in this pantheon seem to be related to Greek mythology and to Greek gods. Hulk is talking right now to a bald man named Agamemnon. So we have all these Greek-themed characters, and Agamemnon is letting Hulk know that a young boy named Max Mir, who's 13, by the way, is going to grow up to be the next Hitler, and Achilles was sent to find the boy, but Achilles is going off script and actually attempted to kill the boy in Tel Aviv. And so now Hulk is supposed to go and protect the boy, because Hulk, of course, finds the idea of killing a 13-year-old boy atrocious and horrible. We should also note at this point, Peter David was famous for exploring Hulk's psychology and seeing the way he'd evolve over time. And at this point, we have what is called the Smart Hulk, which is basically the Hulk body, but he's fully intelligent, just like Dr. Banner, probably similar to the Hulk many of you may know from Marvel's Avengers Endgame. Yeah. So that's our mission. Page 13. We have young Max Mears meeting the daughter of Mr. Rabin, Greta Rabin. That's the other reason that I don't think it's meant to be Yitzhak. Yitzhak Rabin's actual daughter's name is Dahlia, not Greta. This is clearly a fictional character, so I think it's a fictional Rabin also. Rabin offers to take Max to see the old city. And at first, Max is like, oh, I don't know, I don't think I should. And then there's a weird panel where all of a sudden, as though he just changed his mind, like, yes, that is a good idea. We should go. And immediately when I saw that, Henry, I don't know about you, but I was suspect of why it was he changed his mind so quickly. So Dahlia basically is going to take him on a tour of the old city. On page 14, we see not Sabra, but good old police officer Ruth Batseroff, told to stay in place while another very manly officer chases after those kids as they explore. On page 15, Greta introduces Max to the idea of haggling over different products and encourages him to haggle. And as Max is haggling over the book, he seems to have mental powers. The panels zoom in on his eyes as he seems to control the mind of the seller and convince him to agree to whatever price he wants. Max gets caught by Achilles, the agent of the Pantheon. Everyone starts descending on the old city. Sabra runs into Hulk. Achilles is going after the young boy. And at the end of our issue, the young boy uses those mental powers again to convince an innocent crowd of onlookers to protect him and to go after Achilles. And all of a sudden, the crowd turns bloodthirsty, pulling out knives and weapons and going to kill Achilles. And as Hulk is fighting Sabra and Achilles seems about to die from this crowd of both Jews and Arabs, you can see a man with a keep on the last page. Our first issue comes to an end.
I just wanted to go through a couple of these pages because they're visually great. Hulk's familiar with her. He remembered the last time, and she, you know, last time Hulk, even though he could speak a little intelligently, he was still sort of smashy. Here he wants to reason with her, and she stings him in the throat, and so Hulk can't talk for most of this issue, and
most of the next,
right? And so he's back to being that Hulk from a perception point of view. Like, he kind of yelled at her and ran away in the last issue, and maybe she was thinking about it. And then here she sees the same old Hulk, the one who is just violent and that's it, and can't even talk. And his first instinct was to talk to her.
Yeah, which gets back again to Sabra's hot-headedness and the fact that, like, she probably more than most superheroes that we read is not going to just sit down and talk first. She is going to punch first and ask questions later. Or in this case, shoot an energy quill into your throat first and ask questions later. Let's dive into part two and our final issue for today.
Our final issue today is Incredible Hulk number 387. It's called Hiding Behind Masks. Same team, although I believe Joe Rubenstein is inking and he wasn't inking on the last one. And Bobby Chase is editor.
So on the cover, we've got Max's head and hands over two separate images suggesting that he's manipulating, controlling everything. To the right, we have Sabra flying up and punching down at the Hulk. So we see this, like, really, I don't know, it's like pretty impressive. Like, maybe in a world where we have Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman, it's not quite as impressive. But to just see this, like, powerful Jewish woman taking it to the Hulk is kind of visually an amazing thing to see. And on the left side, we have that crowd approaching Rick Jones and Achilles, although you can't see Achilles, looking to kill. And there's this like one man looking back very sinisterly, pointing at Rick Jones. And he has glasses, white hair around his balding head, and like a black kippah.
He kind of looks like Peter David, actually.
It does look like Peter David. That's a good point. Right. So basically, Peter David with a yarmulke is going to kill Rick Jones, which is the Hulk's sidekick. We haven't mentioned him yet. But yeah, it's a striking cover. It's not often that you see yarmulkes on covers, and it like draws you in. And like I said, you have this image of like this guy with a yarmulke looking to sort of kill someone, which is like, oh, that's an uncomfortable image, right next to a Jewish superhero and punching the Hulk, which is like, it's just a really interesting contrast in these very different Jewish images.
Yeah, for sure. And with like little Hitler controlling them, it's great.
Yeah. So, Henry, unless you have anything to say, I actually wanted us to pick up on page 7, because the superhero fights, while they're always cool, don't actually give us the real content that we're looking for. But by page 7, we have Sabra avoiding the Hulk in midair. Hulk is leaping, Sabra is flying, and she avoids the Hulk, causing the Hulk to fall into a round, urn-shaped like building, which Sabra then reveals, oi, not the Israel Museum. Hulk is about to crash into the Israel Museum. And in fact, he does, at which point Sabra says, I've got to get him out of the shrine of the book before he destroys everything. A beast like that has no concern for sacred relics. The irony, again, being that this is the smart Hulk. He would very much be concerned. He wouldn't want to destroy it. Sabra doesn't know it. But this is amazing. So we have, in comic book form, the Israel Museum, which was established 1965 in Givat Ram, a neighborhood in Jerusalem. And the special section of the Israel Museum, the Shrine of the Book, it's a wing that specifically holds the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Dead Sea Scrolls, of course, being scrolls that were found in the caves of Qumran, that sort of reveal a lot about both ascetic and separatist camps, as well as the religious diversity of the Second Temple that otherwise we didn't really have record for. The Dead Sea Scrolls were a major archaeological and historical discovery. So they're set up in this museum, and never in my life did I expect to see like the museum where the Dead Sea Scrolls are stored appearing in my Incredible Hulk comic book.
Yeah, and Dale Keown nailed the look of the museum too.
On page 8, as they're fighting, I just love that at the top of the page, this Sabra is kicking the Hulk. She calls him Yuhamor.
Amazing. I love that.
Right. So she's basically saying like donkey, right? Like the idea that like the Hulk is just a donkey that's terrorizing something inside without knowing. And again, of course, the Hulk, if only he could talk, would explain
that he, I am not a donkey.
Right. I'm not a donkey. I don't want to destroy anything.
I have a PhD.
Seriously. Yeah, a donkey with the PhD. Look.
Right. And also, if she called him a chamor in the previous page, when she says, eat this, you pig, she should have called him a chazer.
You're not wrong. So on this page, she calls him a pig, and it would have been better to continue with the Hebrew, or a chazir, I suppose, in this case, rather than Yiddish. Right. I get the feeling Sabra, despite how she's drawn, like, I don't know, do you think Sabra is Ashkenazi or Sephardi or other entirely?
I don't know. I mean, Sabra, for some reason, I associate a Sabra with a Sephardim, but her parents could have been Ashkenazim.
Yeah.
You know, she definitely was born in Israel because her name is Sabra.
Right. She's native to Israel. So, like, I just don't think that she has much of a connection, despite the oi, I don't think she has much of a connection to, like, Yiddish language. She's, like, very much the Hebrew.
Do you think she's observant?
No, not at all. I think she's like a total secular Israeli.
Totally secular. Okay.
Totally. While Hulk and Sabra are fighting, on page 12, we find ourselves with Achilles. Achilles is explaining his reasoning for why it is he needs to kill that kid, explaining it to Rick Jones, once again, Hulk's sidekick and partner. And Achilles says, when Rick Jones is like, why are you just going to go after this kid? That kid has the potential to be the next Hitler. I'm not going to stand by and let that happen. He must be stopped, and I don't care how innocent he looks. Delphi saw visions of him leading armies, destroying everything, and I swore to them I would never let it happen. Never again. So clearly with those words, Henry, we're already getting a preview. Like, it couldn't be more obvious to those of us, at least in the know, that Peter David is setting up a Holocaust reference, right? I mean, we've already been dealing with the Hitler paradigm, but clearly this is a Shoah reference, the idea of never again. And we're actually recording this the night right as Yom HaShoah has ended, right as the Holocaust Remembrance Day has come to an end. So it's kind of interesting to be looking at this fear of a second Holocaust predicted in the future, and this man Achilles who's motivated. But it's also strange, this guy Achilles, named after a Greek hero with the blondest hair this side of Steve Rogers, using the phrase never again.
It was weird. It kind of like it threw me off a little bit.
Yes. And we're pointing that because it's going to lead us somewhere, listeners. Don't you worry. Page 13, as Sabra and Hulk battle on, Sabra continues to fight him. And gosh, it's just, how about this, Henry? I'm going to read Sabra. And then can you read Hulk's thought bubble right afterwards?
Sure.
So Sabra's beating the crap out of Hulk. And she says, "I'm small and you're huge. But so is Israel small, and we stand up against our enemies. Attack us, and we endure. Drop scuds on us, we endure. And we give as good as we get."
Terrific. I'm not fighting a woman. I'm fighting the Zionist recruiting board.
Hey, very well done, Peter David.
Yeah, sick burn.
I don't think it's a sick burn. This just, to me, reads like Peter David's normal sarcastic wit. Like, he likes making cheesy jokes like this, and I just, like... Yeah. Like, I don't know if it's meant to be a sick burn or if it's more like, "I'm fighting the Zionist recruiting board, wah, wah, right. wah, wah." Like,
and it really, like, I was like, oh, that is such a 90s Hulk Peter David, like, thing to say.
It's totally
like cheesy jokes, you know.
right. He fills his runs with a lot of deep psychological insight and the cheesiest puns and jokes. but it's just like, yeah, it's very funny. And this is honestly... this becomes sort of recurring characterization for Sabra, which is that she's often like everything about her is like metaphorical and allegorical for the entire state of Israel. She's constantly comparing herself to it. Sometimes it feels like it gets in the way of like I prefer the characterization where she's interesting and crying over the young boy and things like that, to when she's just sort of shouting and saying things like, "Just like Israel, you can't stop me." But I also kind of understand why she's, you know, she is the superheroine of the state. She's identifying with that mentality of, like, never giving up.
On this page, right after that thought bubble.
Yeah.
Could you read her again?
Sure. So apparently she does like to use the Yiddish, or at least Peter David does. Because Sabra looks up and says, "Gewalt, we landed at the Wailing Wall. What was I thinking? What was I thinking? If he takes a swing at me and misses, he..." They've wound up at the Wailing Wall, and Sabra is so nervous that Hulk is going to accidentally destroy it, which, like, I don't know, Henry, that's actually a terrifying thought if there's a superhero battle in Jerusalem and the Western Wall were crushed.
We've talked about this in a previous episode, maybe even the first one, about how, like, when a massive superhero battle happens, like, there's casualties and, like, stuff gets destroyed. Like, you know, the Avengers movies for, like, the next two Avengers movies talked about the Battle of New York, referring to the first one, because all of New York got trashed. Like, yeah, if that happened in Jerusalem, especially in the old city, that would be horrible.
Yeah, right. I mean, it would actually be fascinating, because you imagine that what would happen is that the Datim, the very religious and the sort of ultra orthodox, would then have to view the superheroes as in some ways being the will of God, that God chose to smite Israel for some reason and punish them using, right, in the same way that Rome was like, the only reason that Rome destroyed the temple and the second temple and the only reason that Babylonia destroyed the first temple before that is because it was actually God's will. Like, that's the way Jewish theology works. So if a superhero were to go in and destroy sacred sites in Judaism, all of a sudden that superhero would become part of Jewish theology and would be the hand of God.
This is weird. We've gone into like a weird area that we've never gone before.
I know. It's like a really fascinating theoretical. By page 15, we're leaving the battle and joining up once again with young Max and Greta. And Greta says, come on, we'll hide behind the dome of the rock up ahead. And this is the moment where I really became suspicious of Greta, thinking what Israeli, even a young Israeli child, would think that it would be okay to run up to the dome of the rock and hide behind it, right? Like, it's like very clear that Israelis know you do not go to the dome of the rock. If you do, you are risking like war, essentially. Like it would be viewed as a provocation for the daughter of an Israeli governmental official to step up to the Dome of the Rock. So it was really weird when I read. Max goes with her. They hide. They're still being hunted by Achilles. We'll catch in later, but Max continues using his powers. On page 16, I guess I'll go ahead and read once again. Sabra gets into another one of her monologues as Hulk sort of is approaching her against a wall, and Sabra thinks that she's been backed into a corner at the Wailing Wall. She's protecting it with her body. The whole world thinks Israel is weak now. We waited for America to defend us from Saddam, and our pride was far more devastated than our cities. Violence against women here, it's becoming commonplace. Frustrated soldiers are beating their wives because they had to stay their hand against Iraq. Our anger eats away even at ourselves. So you take a message back to your American friends, monster. You tell them I died with honor, that Israelis fear no enemy, that our people will never again submit to the murderous tyranny. And Hulk, you know, interrupts her and basically is like, you win. Like, he finally gets his voice back and ends the fight. But I just want to go in. This was a really fascinating, you know, we're kind of finding a fine line between Jewish content and political content at this point as we enter Israel. But I found like Peter David's scripting here really interesting as she goes into this, this monologue about the idea that there's increased violence against women and how it may or may not be related to the Gulf War and relations with Iraq and American involvement. I tried to see if I could find anything. The only extra information I was able to find is Canada's Immigration and Refugee Board released a briefing in February 1995 that cited a 1991 annual report from the New Israel Fund. And in the New Israel Fund's 1991 annual report, it did report that there were 1,499 calls related to sexual assault in 1991 and 2,182 calls related to sexual assaults in Israel. These numbers coming from the Association of Rape Crisis Centers in Israel. So there is in the early 90s what seems to be a rise in sexual assault and violence against women. Whether or not that is related, right? Like, I was thrown off by this idea of like soldiers that don't get to go to battle go beat up their wives instead. That was really off-putting to me.
Yeah, and I had never heard of that, so I didn't know.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it. On page 18, Hulk and Sabra have met up with Achilles. They're hoping that young Max is able to escape and get away. And Achilles notices that Max is running in the direction of where the mob is chasing after Rick Jones. And so he decides to distract Sabra and Hulk by telling a story. And despite the fact he's distracting them, I think what he's about to do is tell the truth. This threw me for a loop, as at the bottom of page 18, Achilles says, I assume you've heard of Dachau. I was there. I was born in Germany in 1909, a Jew. I know nothing of my true parentage or powers, for my real father wanted me to live in the real world. All I knew was that I never had a sick day in my life. And this was just like out of nowhere, even though we had this hint earlier when he said never again, this blonde Greek hero Achilles is really more of a Samson. Mm-hmm. He is a Yid. Not just that, but he was a Yid born in Germany.
Yeah.
And on the next page, we get a flashback revealing that his real name is Helmut, that he had a wife and three children, and that during Hitler's rise, and during Hitler's reign, he sees his family hauled away. He's sent to Dachau. They try to tattoo a number on his arm, but the needle breaks because he's invulnerable, but he doesn't know it. That's also like a cool concept if they're superheroes, the idea of like trying to tattoo and the needle keeps breaking. So they just send him to the delousing showers, as he calls it, which he reveals are just gas chambers. And then we have this really powerful, these images of Jews in concentration camps and then naked bodies piled into mass graves after going through the gas chambers, Helmut or Achilles among them, but he's alive because this is the experience that let him know that he actually is invulnerable and can't die. He survived it. And he finishes his story by saying, "I wouldn't expect Dr. Banner to understand, Sabra, but you, you know, never again." And Sabra repeats, "Never again." And all of a sudden, Henry, we have two Jewish superheroes sharing this simple phrase and seemingly debating the ethics of whether or not they should kill the next Hitler.
That was a shocking page to see. I was not expecting that.
Right.
By the way, and that was probably not fun for Dale Keown to draw.
No. So. And it's,
I wonder if he was like, "Is this okay? Can I draw this?" You know.
Well, it's pretty early, right? Like it's like a pre, you know, we're not in 2009 in Magneto Testament era of like sort of showing it, but we are in a post-Mouse era, right? So we've probably, So Dale Keown, right, he draws it. It's disturbing light imagery, but all of a sudden this, you know, exploration of Sabra in this episode we're doing, this issue went pretty deep on the Jewish content, getting into, you know, famous Israeli sites, Israeli mentality, the Shoah and the persistence. And then, like I said, to find two Israelis or to find two Jewish superheroes, one of whom, Henry, I just realized these two Jewish superheroes that are debating each other, one is a native born Israeli, a Sabra, and the other is a blonde haired guy you wouldn't know who's Jewish, who's basically assimilated with the non-Jewish society around him, right? He's like an American-born Jew. Well, I mean, he's German-born, but like he's an assimilated Jew who looks not Jewish, and they're having this debate over what to do with someone that they have a prophecy and a vision will become Hitler. It's crazy that that's in a 1991 comic book.
Yeah, I wonder what would have happened if I just stumbled on this when I was 9 or 10 or even 11, 12, looking at back issues. Like, what would I have thought, you know?
I imagine, like, I mean, I think it would have gone over our heads. Like, I've looked back since we've started this endeavor at some issues that we see have Jewish content. And I remember I was like, "Oh, I read that as a kid. I did not notice that at all." Unfortunately, as Achilles is explaining the story, Max winds up running into Rick Jones. Rick Jones runs past, but Max can't get by. And the mob tramples over Max entirely, trampling him seemingly to death. We don't know. At which point the mob originally reverts to normal and isn't sure what they're doing there, as though his being taken out, Max's being taken out, ends his powers in a stranglehold. On the next page, on page 21, we get the end of the story and we get some really crazy revelations. First of all, Agamemnon reveals that Achilles did not go rogue, that Agamemnon, who's actually his true father, instructed him to kill the boy. And now there's a question I still don't know, Henry. Is it like Achilles is really the son of Agamemnon and he was like born into the body of a young Jew in Germany? Or is that whole Jew in Germany stuff a lie and he's really just the like son of Agamemnon that was doing this as instructed by his father to manipulate the Hulk?
I don't know. He seemed pretty sincere with the never again stuff.
Yeah, he did. He did. So I'm hoping, I want to read it that he's like connected to Agamemnon and was born into the body of a Jew in Germany in 1909.
I guess the question is, the next times that we see Achilles, I don't remember him 100% from that run, but does he ever talk about being Jewish ever again? You know?
It'll be something for us to look into in the future. And the second revelation is we see young Greta visiting Max in the hospital and through her narration revealing he's not in a coma, he's not going to be just the vegetable, he's going to heal and be fine. And also, like, how silly, they all thought that you were the one with powers. No, I'm the one with mind control powers. I was controlling you and making it look like you were controlling other things. We're going to have a great time. And surprise, surprise, Delphi's vision was correct, that he would grow up to do these things, but only because he's being manipulated by Greta Robin.
That was wild.
which, Henry, I mean, this is, I just want to acknowledge what we thought was just exploring Sabra led to an issue in which we had three Jewish characters, a superhero in Sabra, an anti-hero in Achilles, and a surprise villain in Greta.
Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever read a mainstream superhero comic that had three explicitly Jewish, two of them explicitly Israeli super characters all interacting with each other. It's kind of wild.
Kitty and Magneto have interacted.
Yeah.
So that's probably your closest thing.
Right.
And maybe if the Thing was there also. I guess we'll save... Well, I was going to say, like, we don't want to do final thoughts on Sabra because we're not done with her.
Yeah, we don't want to do final thoughts, but how about, like... I mean, Henry, you were aware of her, but in some ways, I think this was your real introduction to the character, right? So just like,
yeah,
what do you think of her so far?
At least between her and Moon Knight, I had heard of her. I hadn't even heard of Moon Knight, so other than when you told me about him. But these were cool issues. I don't know how much Jewish content there was, like explicitly Jewish content. There was some, but I enjoyed reading the Hulk aspect of both of them for sure.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't love her character at this point.
I don't love her character either.
I don't think she has enough character yet to
make... Exactly. I think the problem is that she's a bit of a... Like a lot of those characters, she's a bit of a sort of flat stereotype of like, yeah, she represents Israel, right? And it would be, you know, it's a little troubling to read. I do think, though, like, you know, having engaged in through this last issue, like I said... we talked about Dead Sea Scrolls. We talked about the Holocaust. We talked about the hypothetical of how would Jews respond to the possibility of stopping Hitler. You know, we ended up talking about various war and peace plans. Like, I think, you know, it was not Jewish ritual content, but I think we had some pretty explicit Judaism in this. And, you know, I never want to be one to conflate Judaism and Zionism, but it's very clear that Israel is the Jewish state and that there is a lot of Jewish influence in Israel. And so I think for a lot of people I know, they connect to their Jewish identity through Israeli culture more than they do through Jewish ritual. So that's why I just want to argue that I do think there was a lot of, it was certainly Israeli content, but I also think there was a lot of Jewish content in these issues. If the Hulk is fighting a Jewish superhero in Jerusalem,
right, that's what I mean.
Who's concerned that the Western Wall is going to get destroyed,
that's Jewish,
right? Yeah. If the Hulk is just like in Jerusalem and then moves on to the next country, like it's not, right?
Right. Well, I guess in the next episode we'll find out more about her.
Yeah, we'll see her get developed a little bit more, and I think we'll have some more explicitly Jewish content in part two also. We're going to be looking at very briefly at the 1980s Contest of Champions series I alluded to earlier, and then we're going to be looking at two issues from 1995's New Warriors. We're going to be looking at New Warriors number 58 and 59, where Sabra once again meets another Jewish superhero, the young man known as Justice. We'll tell you all about him and the continuing adventures of Sabra next time. But until then, I'm Brandon Bernstein.
I'm Henry Bernstein.
No relation. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Jewish Comics Pod, or you can email us at jewishcomicspodcast@gmail.com.